In the meditation tradition in which I've been trained, we often begin any presentation, any talk to a group, any way in which we're bringing ourselves forward as an offering to other people with a bow. And the bow is symbolic of offering the heart and offering my vulnerability, the back of the neck, and really offering myself here in a naked and vulnerable way. So I'd like to begin with that. It's actually a privilege for me to be able to share with the people who have been watching and listening to the Self-Acceptance Project some of the things that I've learned as the host and producer of the series. Really, in my heart, I'd love for this to be a type of dialogue between us, a sharing, a giving and receiving. And so right here at the very beginning, I want to invite you that if you have things that you've really discovered, if you've actually listened and watched these 22 episodes, or even a handful of these episodes, or even one episode that actually moved you, I'd love to know what moved you, what impacted you, what changed you, really, what went into you and went into your blood and bones and heart, what entered you and made a difference in your life. I'd love to know. You can write to acceptance@soundstrue.com. So that's the email address, acceptance@soundstrue.com. And I'd love to know. I'd love to know what's been meaningful for you, what's impacted you, what's made a difference in your life. And I'm going to read all these emails and really take it in and receive it, because I want to learn. I want to learn from your experience. Okay, so this is our wrap-up session. And it's an opportunity for me to share with you some of the key gleanings, key insights that have entered my bones and blood and being. So not just my head, not just ideas that I can talk about at a cocktail party, although, of course, that's always helpful too. But really what I'm interested in are what the lessons have been that I've been really incorporating into my day-to-day life. And that's what I want to share with you. And as we move into that, I just want to set the stage by sharing one brief story, which is Sounds True has now been in existence for 28 years. And in the beginning, I would sit with authors in the studio and I would record their material and then edit that material. And often I would be with an author for 3, 4, maybe even 5 days in the studio. And I would be listening to 7, 8, 9, 10, 15 hours of teachings. And it was so much to ingest, so much to take in, that I made a little kind of deal with myself, which is that if I could just take away one idea, that was enough, that I couldn't possibly hope to really remember and metabolize and ingest so much of somebody's work. It was just overwhelming to me. But could I take one idea and make it real in my life? And so that's the way I approached working with an author. What's the one idea from this person that's really going to make a difference? So in looking at this Self-Acceptance series, 22 interviews, 7 ideas have emerged for me that are really meaningful that I want to share with you today. Okay, here's the first one. The way we ask a question actually belies our state of being in the moment that we ask the question. The moment we open our mouth, it actually communicates, even if we're asking a question, what our state of mind is, our state of being, the frame in which we're viewing the world. So here with the Self-Acceptance Project, the way that really I framed the question was, We have this terrible challenge. It sucks. We don't accept ourselves. It's terrible. I hate it. Can you help me? Really, if you get underneath what the question was of the series, this is terrible. It's painful. I'm tired of it. Our listeners are tired of it. Can you help us with the lack of self-acceptance we have in our life? That was really the question. And the very first thing that I learned in this series was that the framing of the question showed and revealed a lack of self-acceptance. Oh my God, I actually don't accept all the ways I don't accept myself. I want to change it, and I want to change it now. I want this to be a fixer-upper project. Please get me out of this. And what I got fed back by many of the presenters as I asked this question was, let's start with our lack of self-acceptance not being a problem. Let's start by accepting our lack of self-acceptance. Oh my God. The whole series actually answered my question right there in the beginning. There was this immediate relaxation, an immediate kind of letting go of the shoulders and everything. Oh, I can accept the fact that I'm not very self-accepting of myself a lot. Huh. Now, how is it so easy to accept this part of ourself? Because, as many of the presenters explained, especially some of the presenters who are very familiar with neuroscience and new discoveries in brain research, we're actually wired. It's called the negativity bias that they've discovered that's in the survival part of us, wired in our brain. We're actually wired to look for threat, to look for where our survival might be at risk. So we're wired to look at any situation and say, what bad thing might happen to me? And especially when it comes to belonging to the group, being accepted by the group, being accepted and loved by other people, by having the tribe say, yeah, you're a part of us. So the moment there's a sense that I've done or I've said something that might exile me from the group, I might be rejected, the group might hit the eject button on me, I'm in a full-blown panic. I could just be thrown out of the tribe and sent out to starve to death. Oh my God. Yeah, I'm terrified of this moment. And this is actually wired in biologically for us to look for this threat. So the fact that as a person, I'm in a vigilant state of mind, looking for the moment when I might be rejected by others is actually human. I'm just being a human being. Oh, okay. A couple of the presenters also emphasized this idea of whenever we feel a lack of self-acceptance, we can tune in to the universality of that experience, that this is a universal experience. And so what I started reflecting on is how I think, first of all, it's only me that feels this terrible about myself, and secondly, that it's a problem to solve, when in fact, what the people who were interviewed in the Self-Acceptance Project said almost universally is, this is a very human experience wired into the brain, and all of us go through it, and you can accept your lack of self-acceptance. Okay, so that was my first big lesson. And now I'm going to share with you my second big lesson. And, you know, my therapist says that I'm a very bottom-line thinker. And I think I am a bottom-line thinker. And what that means is I try to go for the, you could call it the jugular, you could call it the essence, you could call it the bottom line in business. Often when I look at the financials of the company, I do turn directly to the bottom line, and then I go and look at all the other numbers. But yeah, I want to get right to it. And this teaching for me has been in many ways the bottom line for me of the Self-Acceptance Project in terms of what I've taken away that I can actually use in my life. And it came in the very first episode with Kristen Neff talking about self-compassion. And what she said is that you can switch from this reptilian brain that is looking out at survival needs, you can make the switch into the mammalian part of the brain, the nurturing and loving part of the brain, through the simple act of touch. You can touch yourself. Now, of course, there's lots of jokes that we can make about, you know, now I've learned to touch myself in God knows what kinds of ways. But I actually mean this very, very literally and concretely. And the way that I've come to touch myself, yes, here, I'm telling you guys my secrets. This is right here. I said I was going to make myself vulnerable, and I meant it, actually. I like to feel skin upon skin. There's something about the actual conduction, if you will, the feeling of the raw skin touching my own skin, that there's an immediate sense of being soothed. Kristin Neff talks about the oxytocin that's released and how this part of our mammalian brain that's wired into us is like a mother with a child. And we're soothing, in a sense, that child part of us that's freaked out and panicked. And interesting, like with a child, sometimes when they're freaked out or panicked, just, 10 seconds later, they're back running out and playing. I've noticed the same thing with me, that often, and I don't even have to, I could stroke myself, yes, okay, all jokes allowed, but I could also just put my hand right here and just feel that skin to skin. Kristin Neff talks about the possibility of putting your hand on your heart. I don't know, for whatever reason, that doesn't work as well for me. It makes me a little self-conscious in a way. Whereas just putting my hand like this, like, no one even knows what I'm doing. They think I'm just resting my hand. Little is it known that I'm soothing myself. Kristin also gives the example of putting your hand on your face, which is something that I've heard Pema Chodron talk about as well, that this can be an incredible act of self-compassion. And what I love about it is we're communicating to our physiology. We don't have to think about it. We don't have to remember anything we learned in 22 episodes of anything, or the books that we read, or the, you know, what this meditation teacher or counselor, we don't need to remember anything. It's just right there. And we hook, and that's why I think of this as a bottom line idea. And we hook right into our physiology, right into that moment. And what I notice is that my breathing changes in that moment. There's a softening. And there's a sense of like being there for myself. And I think what I love about it is it's so simple. So simple. The third thing that I have learned from this series is something that I've been learning a lot working with Sounds True authors and hosting the podcast series Insights at the Edge that I host, and also in my own meditation practice. And it seems like it just keeps getting emphasized again and again and again and again, which is, can we turn towards the difficult sensations that we feel in our body when we're emotionally upset? And can we stay with those sensations? Bruce Tift calls this the counter-instinctual move, and that the practice of sanity, this is Bruce Tift speaking, is actually counter-instinctual. And this was very helpful to me to hear this, because we often think, you know, why is it so hard? You know, why is growth so hard? Why is self-discovery so hard? Well, it's actually counter-instinctual, because when we feel all stirred up inside, panicky, or like our stomach is turning over in three different kinds of ways and like a washing machine, or our throat, you know, feels like there's a boa constrictor, what the instinctual response is to go out and take a jog or call a friend or eat four brownies or smoke some dope or do something to get out of this pain now, please. It hurts. It sucks. I just want to do something. But actually, the path of growth and the path of self-acceptance is to be with those sensations, to actually hang with them, to breathe into them. So the first step being aware, oh, I'm freaked out right now. Okay, that's why I'm checking my email for the 400th time when I don't have any new messages. That's why I'm sitting here with the remote control watching television when I don't even really know what I'm watching and there's nothing I feel like watching. That's why I'm standing in front of the refrigerator and I don't even feel like eating, but I'm what is actually going on? So becoming aware and then saying, oh, what's happening in my body right now? My stomach is turning around. I mean, that's often what I notice is that there's something in my stomach like a washing machine. Okay, can I now do the counter-instinctual thing and be with those painful sensations? That's actually self-acceptance. I'm accepting what's happening in my experience right now, and I'm not turning away from it. I'm turning towards it, and I'm embracing it. I'm being with it. So there is this awareness, noticing, and then tolerating the intensity of how yucky it can feel in there. And it can feel incredibly yucky. Whatever that fear, anxiety, terror, panic, freak out is, it has physical sensations with it that can be very, very, very intense. And can we sit in that like a fire? And actually just sit in that fire. How long can we let it burn? And when we do that, when we let ourselves be with and burn with the intensity at the sensation level of whatever's going on, I think that's how we develop what in the meditation tradition I've been trained in is called unconditional confidence. That's how we develop unconditional confidence, because we know we can withstand anything. So that means that you can say something terrible to me that really hurts, but I can be open to it and I can take it because I know how to sit in the fire. That means that I can take a risk and risk failure and how terrible failure might feel, because if there is failure, I can hang with it. There's going to be some yucky sensations. It's going to really be yucky. I can risk loving someone, maybe the ultimate risk, and how unbelievably that might hurt, will hurt actually, whether it's at the person's death or my own death or something else happens. But I can actually take that heart risk and step into it and possibly actually touch some of the fulfillment of love, because I'm willing to take that risk because I've sat in the fire of all kinds of shit. So I could take the heartbreak because I know what it means to take heartbreak. I can sit through it. I can sit in it. So this is one of the big things that I heard again and again and again in this series. Can we be aware of what we're feeling, not bounce off of it into reaction and addiction, be with it at a pure sensation level and hang in there and burn? The fourth lesson that's really a takeaway for me from this series relates a lot to what I just said about training ourselves, if you will, and training ourselves in our everyday life from those moments when we feel upset, when we feel like we're going down the drain, using those as training moments so we can actually receive feedback. And we can become a learner because it's having the position, if you will, the attitude, the disposition of being a learner that allows us to grow and allows us to see when something happens. So something happens and I feel terrible. Maybe, you know, I said something or anything happens. Can I take the learning out of it, discriminate, study it? If, for example, I've done something and I feel guilty about it, I can look at the situation and I can say, oh, I feel some guilt. Guilt meaning there's something that I want to do. Okay, I need to repair this. I need to take some action. I'm going to write a letter to that person, or I'm going to say something to that person, or I'm going to apologize or make amends. Oh, okay, I'm a learner. I did something, and now I need to make some other actions as a result. Good, I'm learning. That's okay. I'm not perfect. I'm a learner. Here's a moment where I don't feel accepting of myself. Maybe there's something I need to learn. Cool. Great. I got the feedback. Now, maybe it's actually not about me learning and changing. I can discriminate. Maybe this is really about the other person. Maybe this is really about them. Okay. I can sift this out. I can take what is needed as action in my life and move forward. Parker Palmer talked about how in his own inner life, when he thought of depression in his life, it was like a dark man stalking him from a block away, and how he couldn't turn, didn't want to turn and listen to what this dark man had to say. And that part of his inner process that he shared in this series, in the episode in which I interviewed him, was about how he has learned as a person that he needs to be able to listen, turn around to the dark man stalking on the inside and say, what do you have to say to me? I want to listen. I want to hear it. I can take it in and I can work with that feedback. And so this idea that we're always learning and being comfortable with being a learner, not having to be ever the knower, the expert, the accomplished one, but always returning to that position. And I want to share something specific to this series, which I think in a way, actually, I think it's pretty funny, actually. At this moment, I think it's funny. It's absurd. Which is, as part of preparing for this final wrap-up session, I went back and I watched some of the Self-Acceptance Project interviews, which is something I almost never do. First of all, most of the time I interview people, it's an audio interview, it's not on video. And so I've done hundreds of radio interviews and maybe only dozens of these video interviews. So I went back and I watched a few of them. And one of the first things I noticed was that my face was like this. During about three quarters of the times when I was asking questions, my face was like this. And my first response was like, this is terrible, actually. What is going on? Why do I look like a serious, contorted, overthinking, glum person? Was I glum when I was listening? I don't think I felt glum, but I certainly looked. This is not good for broadcasting. This is terrible, actually. This isn't welcoming to people. I look repulsive. And I was like, isn't it funny that you're discovering that you look repulsive on the Self-Acceptance Project? This is a moment, Tammy. God is tickling your funny bone. What are you going to do here? And I thought, well, first of all, I need to discover, was it the lights in the room? Was it just that I couldn't see what was going on? Or is it that actually when I listen, I make faces and I kind of listen like this? And I thought, you know, it's probably a combination of things, probably somewhat has to do with the lighting, but probably a lot of it has to do with how I snarl when I'm taking in somebody else and I'm kind of like metabolizing them inside me and I'm really kind of trying to understand them, I snarl. And okay, now I could right now go and flush myself down the toilet and say that any hopes I ever had for continuing to do video interviews are over. Or maybe I should get like a broadcasting coach and learn how to work with this experience so that I can listen and be open without making a snarly face. And I thought, you know, isn't this fabulous? I've been deeply engaged, truly at a heart level with this series, And I can take this feedback, the feedback of actually looking at myself, which is hard, which is probably why I don't go back and watch things that I've done. I can actually take this feedback and grow from it, being a learner. The fifth insight I want to share came late in the series, and it was from Stephen Hayes, who's the founder of ACT, Acceptance and Commitment Therapy. And at one point he said, "You know, Tammy, I could just boil this down to you for one simple technique that you and your listeners could take away that will really help with self-acceptance." And I was like, "Stephen, give it to me. You've written 500 published articles. I mean, you're a brilliant man. I want to hear what you have to say." And he said, "Here's the secret. Take perspective. Find a way to gain a perspective on whatever you're experiencing. So take that perspective 10 years from now. 10 years from now, look back at you hosting a series with a snarly face. Look back from that perspective 20 years ago. 20 years from now, how much will you care, really? So something happened. You made a comment. Can you look at it 3 weeks from now? Look back at that. How much does it really matter?" And that this idea of taking perspective is so important, and it's something we can do in an instant. Kelly McGonigal talked about how she helps people write a letter from a compassionate part of themselves to the part that's suffering. It's another form of taking perspective. And many of the presenters talked about how compassion is something that we feel for the other, but it's hard to feel for ourselves. So can we actually take the suffering part of ourselves and treat it like this other needing compassion? And this act of separating and taking perspective is a simple, easy way to do it. And that's how we can see actually the humor in a situation. It's from this perspective. We're not right in it anymore. We can look at the outside and say, "Tammy snarled through the self-acceptance interview series." It's kind of funny, actually, from a perspective far away looking in. The sixth insight that really hit home for me was the idea that the work we do to accept the unlovable parts of ourselves, to accept the actions that we take that we wish we hadn't taken, that work is not work we're just doing for ourselves alone, not at all. It's work we're doing for the whole world. And again, to quote Parker Palmer, he talked about how racism and homophobia and every form of scapegoating that we've ever known in the world where human rights are compromised, it comes actually from the part of people where they can't accept themselves. I have to scapegoat and put you down because you're bringing forward something in me that I can't stand to look at. And so when we do this work of self-acceptance, we're actually liberating humans to be accepted for who they are. When we accept ourselves, we can accept other people. We find the room inside of us for ourselves. We have room for the other who doesn't look like us, the other who has different beliefs from us, the dark other, the queer other, the strange other, the sick other, the sad other, the tormented other. We suddenly are a being of spacious acceptance, and we can take in other individuals, other groups. And I think the reason this is so important to me was there was a moment, you know, just looking, the self-acceptance project. Oh, sounds true. Helps another group of privileged white people look at their navel and not feel so bad about themselves. And you could take a series like this and you could put it into that type of box or critique and narrow it down. And it would be so unfair to the actual work that we're doing when we stop and we say, you know this way that I'm being cruel to myself? Well, I'm the one person who can change this. No one else can change this. I'm the one person who's being cruel to myself right now. This is the point of power, right here. This is the leverage I have in my life, right here. And I can do this differently. And as I do this differently, and as I make the commitment, really, to do this differently, I'm actually impacting. This person walks into the room, and now I have space for them, because that thing that I pushed out of myself, that sense of failure, let's say, that I just couldn't accept. You know, failure wasn't something that was particularly welcome in my household growing up. You know, very accomplishment-oriented situation, you know. Now someone walks in and they feel in that moment some sense of failure in their life. And I don't have to say, excuse me, could you get out of my way? I'm like busy accomplishing something and you're kind of like, you're a little bit of an obstacle right now. I don't have time for you. Are you kidding me? You're weak. You're lame. Get out of here. I don't have to do that. And I think earlier in my life, even though that wasn't articulate, that that's what I was doing, I think I was doing that sometimes when people would bring forward things that looked lame to me. I couldn't accept aspects of my own lameness into my experience. And so when I saw that in other people, I couldn't make the space for them. I couldn't receive them. And in receiving them, be a source of love and healing for them, room for them. So this work that we're doing, yes, we're doing it for ourselves, but we're doing it for our families. We're doing it for our children. We're doing it for our communities, and we're really doing it for the liberation of human rights in the world. The last point that I want to make from this self-acceptance project is that I've been holding a question really in my heart throughout this whole series, which is, what is the self? What is the self that accepts the self? You know, what is this? There's the suffering self, there's the wise self. And more importantly, could self-acceptance be a doorway into a boundless sense of experience and of being that actually doesn't have any definitions to it? How could self-acceptance be that kind of doorway? And as I've sat with that, here's what I've been discovering. Anything that we put out of our love, anything that we put out of our willingness to experience it, becomes the way we configure ourselves. We configure a self by what is left out and what's included. So I'm going to include these wonderful things and I'm going to leave out these other things. And before you know it, you have this configuration. You have this architecture. How did we make this architecture of what we're calling ourself? We made it from what we wanted to identify with and what we wanted to disidentify with. So now I have this thing that I think I am that's called the self, and it's these positive things that's working with these negative things. Okay, what if instead we became actually accepting experience, a flow of experience, a boundless flow of experience? Nothing is actually left out. There is no out. And because there's no out, there's no in. There's no out and there's no in. And how can self-acceptance be the doorway? And I think it's the doorway. When we let everything in, then we become what Jeff Foster talked about as the space for everything to arise within us. He was talking about the space in the room. But imagine the room doesn't have any walls. So we are simply the space in which all experience, nothing is left out of our open-hearted willingness to experience it. It's all welcome in our being. No out, no in, just boundless flow of life. So the Self-Acceptance Project has been a wonderful investigation for me. I've really learned a lot. I hope to learn how to interview people and not snarl up my face in the future. And I'd also love to hear from you, for real. The value here, a lot of it for me, is connecting. And it's strange to connect video to email, you know, but we're not all in the same physical space together, but we can still connect. And so if you want to write to me and the other people who have helped to produce this series, acceptance@soundstrue.com. I'd also like to thank all of the video people and audio people and editors and people on our digital team here at Sounds True, and also Christopher of the Wolves, who provided the beautiful music. It's a song called Tranquility from Reiki Healing Music, and I think it set a beautiful tone for our series. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for being part of this and as a field of support for all of us, helping us all grow. SoundsTrue.com. Many voices, one journey. Thanks for listening.